This is VOA News via remote. I'm Michael Brown. U.S. funding to the World Health Organization is being suspended by President Donald Trump, who blames it for creating a large increase in COVID-19 cases worldwide. The U.N. Health Agency, according to Trump, made a disastrous decision to oppose his restrictions on travel from China and put political correctness above life-saving measures. The president said the freeze on funds for the global agency will remain in place for 60 to 90 days while a review of its outbreak of the coronavirus is being conducted. Trump contends that the WHO failed in its basic duty to investigate early reports out of China about the virus back in December of last year. In a statement Tuesday night, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres repeated his support for the WHO from a week ago, saying supporting the World Health Organization is absolutely critical to the world's effort to win the war against COVID-19. Meanwhile, Dr. Anthony Fauci, a member of the White House Corona Task Force, told the Associated Press that the United States does not yet have the critical testing and tracing procedures needed to begin reopening the nation's economy. Former U.S. President Barack Obama is endorsing his former second-in-command, Joe Biden, for president, calling Biden a clear choice to replace President Trump in November's national election. Obama said the country's future hangs on this election. Obama urged Americans to keep believing in the possibilities of a better world by supporting Biden's campaign. Biden told donors at a virtual fundraiser earlier this month that he had asked the former president for advice on choosing a running mate, whom he has said will be a woman. The support Obama gives, who is popular among Democrats, could help Biden unite Democrats after the long party nomination process. This is VOA News. South Koreans are choosing members of the legislature Wednesday amid the country's battle to prevent the spread of the coronavirus. Voters are required to wear masks or check for fevers at the entrance of the polling stations and were asked to maintain social distance while moving toward the polling places. This year's election will determine whether the ruling Democratic Party will maintain its majority or lose control of the parliament to the main opposition United Future Party. South Korea's election is the first case of a country holding a national election in an affected country amid the pandemic outbreak. South Korea currently has 10,564 people infected with the virus and some 222 deaths confirmed so far. Wildfires are burning near the defunct Chernobyl nuclear power plant in Ukraine, and emergency officials say it is impossible to predict when they will be extinguished. Spokeswoman for the Kiev Regional Directorate of the State Emergency Situation Service told reporters Tuesday that the situation has been complicated by heavy winds in the area. Some 400 firefighters have been working in the area where the devastating fires have been burning for almost 2 weeks now. The fires began on April 3rd. Ukraine's National Police said they have detained two people suspected of setting the initial blaze. And Guatemala resumed receiving deportation flights from the U.S. this week after a one-week pause prompted by three deportees testing positive for COVID-19. The Guatemalan government had asked the United States not to send more than 25 deportees per flight, to give them health exams before departure, and to certify that they were not infected. But the flights resumed Monday with 76 migrants on the first flight and 106 on the second. And a lawsuit in a federal court claims Liberty University in the southern state of Virginia failed to protect its students by inviting them back to the campus during a COVID-19 stay-at-home order in the state. The lawsuit says Liberty erred by remaining open and inviting students back to campus, potentially exposing them to the coronavirus, which much of the world is in isolation to avoid. The suit says students who lived in on-campus housing were not expressly forced to move out of their housing while the university's president tried to downplay the significance of the pandemic. The lawsuit questions Dr. President Jerry Falwell Jr.'s comparison to the COVID-19 seasonal flu. VOA Remote, I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbote in Washington. Today is Wednesday, April 15. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni extends coronavirus lockdown.
Given the successes we have achieved and also the challenges that remain, the government has decided to keep the stay-home decision for another 21 days, starting the 15th of April 2020, after the 5th of May 2020.
Malawi's president declares a 21-day lockdown while nurses demand personal protective equipment. We'll examine the impact of COVID-19 on Kenya's education calendar. Why have Senegal's coronavirus infection and death numbers so low? The IMF announces a $500 million debt relief for African nations struggling with COVID-19. And Nigeria marks 6 years of missing Chibok girls amid coronavirus pandemic.
It has not been easy waiting for 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, and then down to 6 years. That was why some of the parents died as a result of complications that had to do with blood pressure, heart failure, kidney failure, and the rest.
Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. With at least 54 confirmed cases of COVID-19 in the country, Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni has extended the lockdown for a further 21 days. The president says the government must harness the efforts aimed at preventing further spread of coronavirus disease in the country. While some Kampala residents welcome the developments, others say they want the government to help by providing essential services like electricity, water, and food. Mugumi Davis Rakoringi reports from Kampala.
In his address to the nation this Tuesday, President Museveni said he's impressed by the work so far in the fight against COVID-19 in Uganda.
Given the successes we have achieved and also the challenges that remain, the government has decided to keep the stay-home decision for another 21 days, starting the 15th of April 2020, after the 5th of May 2020. This is in order to give ourselves more time to study the situation for a longer period. Therefore, all the measures previously announced will stay in place for another 21 days. This additional 21 days will definitely help us to defeat this virus decisively, or if not defeated totally, to prepare better as to how to cope with it.
For example, Mr. Museveni said the government will use the added days to put in place preventive measures for both medical personnel and citizens should the virus persist. These include manufacturing of protection gears and transport arrangements for citizens so they can be able to go about their daily lives. Following the confirmation of the first coronavirus patient in the country, President Museveni came up with over 30 measures aimed at preventing further spread. These include closure of schools, ban of public gatherings, and closure of border crossings for passengers. The president said he will not spare anyone who violates his directives.
Security is going to strengthen the counterintelligence efforts to eliminate corruption in our forces. And anybody found guilty will face the charge of murder or attempted murder. Because if we allow that, you are allowing people who could bring a disease which could kill Ugandans, then we charge you for attempted murder or for actual murder in case what you did results into the death of people.
Kampala resident James Eligo says the extension of the lockdown will make it hard for him to stay in the capital, Kampala.
The income is no longer coming inside my pockets and everything is not going on well. Yeah, my family is not financially standing well. There is no food, everything is just disorganized. The next step, I think, is to run to the village now.
Another resident, Lilian Doisi, says he understands the justification for more days of the lockdown.
Yeah, it is a very good thing because we're still having a worry. We don't know whether the virus is off or on, but because our business have been shut down, so we are worried about food, fast food. We don't have shortage of food. Even if you go in the shops, the price of food is increased.
Ndoisi is a primary school teacher and operates a small grocery shop to supplement her earnings. The government last week embarked on distributing food to people it considers as very vulnerable in Kampala City and neighboring areas. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinj in Kampala, Uganda.
Kenya's coronavirus cases have increased to 260, and learning institutions remain closed until further notice, as most schools and colleges are being used as suspected coronavirus quarantine places. According to the Ministry of Education, the national exams for primary and high schools, which are usually taken at the end of the year, will not be suspended this year. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, students have been subjected to online learning despite marginal areas not being able to access the learning materials.
Learning institutions in Kenya have been converted to temporary health facilities, as most of them are hosting contact cases of the people who came into contact with the COVID-19 patients. The Ministry of Education says the opening of schools will depend majorly on how fast the virus will be contained in the country. Education Cabinet Secretary George Magoha said that the school calendar will remain intact even though it has already been interfered with, since students ranging from pre-primary school to university did not sit for the end of first semester exam that ended in March following the closure of schools early last month.
As at now, I, as the head of the sector, do not see any reason why we should postpone exams. So there's no reason why any parent should be anxious, because when the time comes, we shall actually tell them what they should do. And there are several scenarios.
Professor Magoha says the schools will still remain closed until the country is able to contain the situation before the ministry gives directives on the way forward.
When will the schools open? I think your answer is as good as mine, but in order to allow the nation, you are aware that our facilities are being utilized to control the coronavirus disease with very good results. People should have peace, because we are working on various modalities. When the time is ripe, we shall tell you the various options.
An education expert, Amos Kaburu, says online learning for students while at home may not be productive, since almost 70% of students may not comprehend the learning without the teacher.
What is happening will end up excavating the challenge of inequality that we've had over time. Now, the findings clearly indicate that close to 70% of the children in basic grades lack basic skills. They are unable to read and write. And then this challenge progresses across the grades. By the time children are completing the highest grade of primary education, close to 10% of them cannot read. 10% of them cannot count or cannot add.
Mr. Kaburu says the challenges that have been experienced in education sector earlier may scale up, given that enough has not been done to salvage the situation after COVID-19 struck.
Our education systems are very fragile in the sense that they are not providing what you may call equitable and quality education for all children. And therefore, any forms of shocks that are unprecedented, as the ones that we're seeing right now, happen on such a voluminous scale without notice, it means that they basically scale up the challenge that has been there, because there is loss of time. But equally, how to recover from the effects of COVID in sectors such as education becomes something that one cannot tell.
Some of the private schools are forcing parents to pay school fees so they can pay staff the salaries, a move most parents have refused, arguing that the students are not in school. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Moreno Jiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Malawian President Peter Mutharika late Tuesday announced a 21-day coronavirus lockdown beginning midnight this Saturday, April 18. Malawi currently has 16 confirmed cases of COVID-19 and 2 deaths. The president said his government will provide personal protective equipment, or PPE, to health facilities throughout the country. This week, the National Organization of Nurses and Midwives of Malawi suspended a strike and gave the government until this Friday to respond to its demand for protective equipment. Dr. Isabella Musisi is the registrar and CEO of the Nurses and Midwives Council of Malawi. She says while her organization is encouraged by the president's promise, they will be vigilant about the availability of the PPEs.
The concerns is that the country is also affected by COVID-19 pandemic, which is infectious And besides, our nurses and midwives are frontliners, are taking care of the patients at bedside 24 hours. Hence, they need personal protective equipment always, of which, as a country, currently, we do not have adequate PPEs for all our staff.
The Minister of Health, Mr. Mhango, who is the chair of the Cabinet Committee on COVID-19, said Tuesday that the government will prioritize the safety of frontline health staff by making available all necessary personal protective equipment to health workers. Are you satisfied with this promise?
Yes, we are satisfied with the promise made by our Honorable Minister, Right Honorable Jap Muhango MP. However, as Nurses and Midwives Regulatory Board, we will keep on monitoring the availability and the accessibility of the PPEs to all our health staff.
You are also demanding the government give you risk allowance of up to 70% of your salary, the same as doctors. Are you not concerned that some Malawians might think that you are taking advantage of the current coronavirus situation?
No, Malawians will not think that nurses are taking advantage of the coronavirus, since nurses are not the only professionals that are considered for the risk allowances. In some sectors, like security, like the army, they also get some similar type of allowance.
You have set, I think, April 17, this Friday, as the deadline for the government to respond to your concerns. What would happen come Friday and the government does not meet your concerns?
Nurses and Midwives Council will assess to what extent the government have responded to the concerns and keep on engaging the government policymakers to lobby for all the remaining requests made. But the priority should be the availability of the PPEs to all our staff.
Thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Isabella Musisi is the Registrar and CEO of the Nurses and Midwives Council of Malawi. She was speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, April 15. The International Monetary Fund has approved a $500 million package to give 6 months of debt relief to developing nations struggling with the coronavirus pandemic. While the move is being welcomed, some finance experts say the world's wealthiest nations could do more, especially for the African nations on the list. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
The IMF's plan, which affects 19 African countries, will allow vulnerable nations to channel more of their scarce financial resources towards vital emergency medical and other relief efforts, the organization said in a statement. Eric Lecompte, executive director of the Jubilee USA Network, a coalition of religious organizations that works for international finance system reform, says the plan will provide much-needed relief to countries like the Central African Republic, Chad, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Liberia, Malawi, Niger, and Rwanda. He spoke to VOA from Washington via WhatsApp.
When we're dealing with the reality that, on average, countries across sub-Saharan Africa have an average of 50 critical care units, we know that they're not going to be able to deal with minor elements of the crisis, let alone more significant ones. In part, that's why we saw all the finance ministers across Africa almost 3 weeks ago now step up and say we need to be able to stop paying debts for all African countries, making a call to stop and suspend debt payments for $44 billion. Because they knew that was money that could be quickly invested, moved very quickly into economies to be able to get the ventilators, to be able to increase health systems so that they might be able to combat the virus.
So is the IMF's relief package enough? South African economist Iraja Bedian, who heads Pan-African Investment and Research Services, said the relief package is more symbolic than substantive. And Bedian said, this plan doesn't improve Africa's ability to help itself. The continent's more developed economies like Kenya, South Africa, and Nigeria are not included in the package. The continent needs its developed economies right now, he said. And recent moves in the financial market, like the recent downgrading of South Africa's credit rating to junk status, don't help.
So to the extent that at this very wrong moment, South Africa has been downgraded, it reduces its access to global capital market, it raises the cost of borrowing, and as such, it makes it so much less able to accelerate its capacity to help its own nation, but also in the neighborhood.
And Lecomte said wealthy nations can also do more. He singled out one in particular.
I think one of the challenges we're dealing right now with the G20 in terms of the initial step, which is suspending debt payments, is in particular China has been resistant in the discussion so far. China in particular, because right now China controls 25% of all lending, 25% of all debt in Africa. It doesn't want to change the price tag of that debt.
The African region still has the world's lowest confirmed coronavirus caseload, according to the World Health Organization. But African experts are quick to note gaps in testing and health infrastructure, meaning that even in developed nations like South Africa, there are likely many, many more cases than doctors know about. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
With 299 cases, 183 recovered, and just two deaths so far, Senegal has managed to keep its coronavirus numbers steadily low and escaped putting the country in lockdown. Of course, there is a curfew and social distancing in place. Part of this relative success might be attributed to the extensive planning, which has been ongoing months before the first case. Dr. Abdoulaye Bousso, Director of the Public Health Emergency Operation, spoke to Ricky Stryak about the plans that were put in place to strengthen Senegal's health system prior to the outbreak.
Started our preparation since the first case in China and before the WHO declared the public health emergency of international concern. We started our preparation during the month of January by starting working on the plan, a contingency plan, and with some activities on preparing our hospital to receive eventual new cases and also to train the medical staff working on case definition. We wrote a plan, a contingency plan with a budget for this COVID business. And this plan was adopted by the head of state and financed by the government of Senegal.
When was the plan adopted and how much was the budget for it?
Okay, the plan was adopted 2 of March. And the amount was, in CFA, is $1.7 billion, $3 million.
You going in, what was your main priority? What were the main things you wanted to put in place to mitigate impact on public health?
No, our priority was to have a resilient health system. Yes, because the first challenges was to find beds for eventual cases, because we know that we need to have a specific bed for all patients, because our strategy is to put all positive cases in hospital. And we keep this strategy until now. And we saw that we need to have new beds in hospital. And now we have we found around 500 beds, additional beds in different hospitals of the country to take care of positive patients. The 500 beds are new beds in those hospitals. Because I said that we need to have our system resilient. Mm-hmm. And we need to have all those the different activities in those hospitals to continue. But in our strategy, if eventually the cases raise, we can expand our bed more than 1,000, because at this time we can stop some activities and use some departments or some hospital to be dedicated on COVID.
Which activities but would you
at
stop?
This time, we can say how. All non-emergency situation or emergency cases, for example, the Department of Internal Medicine can stop this activity. We can reduce the number of surgical cases, non-urgent.
That was Dr. Abdoulaye Bousso, Director of Senegal's Public Health Emergency Operation. You're speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar. Nigerian activists are marking 6 years since Boko Haram militants abducted hundreds of schoolgirls from the town of Chibok and kept 112 in captivity. President Muhammadu Buhari maintains he is still working to secure their release. Timothy Obiosu reports from Abuja.
Alan Manasseh is sitting in his house participating in a live broadcast by the Bring Back Our Girls movement to mark the day 6 years ago when Boko Haram kidnapped 276 girls from a school in the Borno state town of Chibok. The virtual commemoration this year is due to travel restrictions imposed because of the coronavirus pandemic. Manasseh is the media and communications director of the Chibok community, a position he says he assumed to help his community fight for the release of the girls.
Related to some of the girls, about 24 are from my family directly, my cousins and nieces.
The audacious abduction of the girls by Boko Haram thrust the group and their brutal insurgency into the global spotlight. Some girls escaped soon after the abduction, and more than 100 others have since been freed through negotiations. But today, 112 are believed to remain in captivity, including Manasseh's nieces.
It has not been easy waiting for 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, and then down to 6 years. It's not easy. That was why some of the parents died as a result of complications that had to do with blood pressure, you know, heart failure, kidney failure, and the rest. Especially the first woman that died after the abduction was my aunt, who had two of her twin girls abducted. Until today, they are part of those missing.
Advocacy group BBOG started a campaign in 2014 demanding the release of the girls. 6 years later, the group is still waiting, says one of its coordinators, Nifemi Onifade.
Every year, we've had annual commemorations as well as other landmark commemorations in that time. And so today, like other days, we simply as a movement hold on to hope that they can still be found and make the same demand of Bring Back Our Girls.
Over the weekend, special prayers and Thanksgiving services were held in Chibok to mark the anniversary. President Muhammadu Buhari said no government official could attend the event due to the coronavirus lockdown, but promised that the girls have not been forgotten. Meanwhile, Nigeria is still seeing attacks by Boko Haram despite the coronavirus. One deadly hit in late March killed at least 50 troops. Military authorities say the soldiers were ambushed in Yobe State as they tried to launch an offensive against the group. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
And that's it for this Wednesday, April 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, hoping you have a good day.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to Ndumbulu and Makossa to Kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.